The 37th Annual Georgia Music Hall of Fame Awards will be held September 26 in Atlanta. Renowned television broadcast journalist Monica Pearson will receive the Chairman's Award.
You're being inducted into the Georgia Music Hall of Fame. Automatically, you would think Monica Pearson, Georgia Association of Broadcasters Hall of Fame, which you're already in, but we wouldn't think the Music Hall of Fame, but you sing a little too, right?
I sing a lot, but I've been emceeing the Georgia Music Hall of Fame big gala for the last 12 years. And I guess what is most exciting for me this year and sad for me this year is that I'm receiving the Director's Award, yeah. And that's Dr. Bobby Bailey. And Dr. Mm-hmm. Bobby Bailey just passed yeah. of a massive stroke. And I got involved because of her.
Oh, really?
And so yeah. this year is really very bittersweet.
Yeah.
And I'm still trying to make up my mind whether or not I can get through a song because I've sung many times yeah. at the event. One
right.
year I did Georgia yeah. on My Mind. And I'd really like to sing something in tribute to her, but I don't know if I could get through it because she was such a phenomenal woman.
Yeah.
Such a phenomenal woman. And it's important to remember with Bobby, she, I think, didn't even finish high school. And her doctor was honorary doctor. But she was as smart as any PhD that ever existed. When you think of what she did with the refrigeration company, when you think about her designing the equipment that went down into the ice and was able to find those World War II planes and bring them
wow.
up, she was brilliant. And more importantly, she was so giving. So to receive this award was a big deal. She called me, and I almost started crying on the phone. I said, "You really selected me." And then 2 months later, she's passed.
Yeah.
So I'm
yeah.
glad while she was here, I was able to let her know how excited I was about receiving the award and how grateful I am to be receiving it.
That's a big award. It's a great event. That's
oh,
a great event,
I
too.
Love
it's a
it.
Lot of fun.
I love it. It's so much fun. In the It becomes a party. That's the thing
yeah.
about it. You get to see people perform you've only heard maybe on, can I still say records? Do people
yeah.
have records
exactly.
anymore?
Yeah.
But you know, that you only heard on records or you only have heard on CDs or you've seen them perform on DVDs. And here they are right there where you can touch them. The 1 year when Usher was there, when Freddie Cole performed, when the Allman Brothers
yeah.
performed. You know, it's just, you're watching history and legends and they're part of a Hall of Fame. And now I'm going to be part of that Hall of
yeah.
Fame, but not for my singing.
Right.
Maybe that's another time.
You never know.
You
never know. You retired from doing a nightly newscast in 2012, but looking at your bio, you really haven't retired. You're very busy.
I retired in 2012 from Channel 2, but, you know, as they say, welcome South, brother. I also
uh-huh.
had welcome South, sister and brother.
Yeah.
You just can't rest on your laurels. And yeah. I immediately went back to school at the University of Georgia because I wanted to teach. So I had to get my master's. So from the time I was 65 until 67, when I graduated in August of 2014, I was in school
yeah.
and immediately started teaching at Atlanta Metropolitan State College, where I am still teaching Introduction to Communications. And it's so much fun to introduce people to a career I've been blessed to have actually for 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
I started out as a radio person in Louisville, Kentucky, working for a Roundsville station. Bill Summers owned the station, and he gave a young high school girl, me, the opportunity to work there. And I did all the prayers because it also was a religious station.
Oh, really?
And I did all the introductions to, hey, everybody, it's Charlie Brown Showtime. So I got my start, you know, as a 16-year-old in radio. And then my degree is actually in English because I planned to teach. And through fate, I ended up working in newspaper and then television. And now I'm back in radio again
yeah.
because I do a Sunday show for Kiss 104.1 in Atlanta. It's R&B, but it's R&B and conversation. So I get to pick my subjects. And I like to do people who can give information that can help better other people's lives. Like I've done something on prostate cancer, done something naturally on breast cancer as an 18-year breast cancer survivor.
Yeah.
I've done something on the juvenile justice system and getting mentors for kids. You name it, I've done it. Because to me, part of the job is not just playing music, but again, giving people information they can use.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I like it better than television.
Yeah.
My TV people would probably go, what? I love radio better than television because I have control of my product and I can touch my listeners. Mm-hmm. There's nothing like going out on a remote and people coming up to you and say, hey, Mike, it's so good to see you. And you get to talk and feel them and ask them what they want to hear.
Yeah.
So I like the, what can I say, the closeness that you get in radio that I don't think you ever really get in television.
Yeah. Do you miss TV? Do you miss doing the nightly news?
No.
It sounds like you don't.
I don't miss doing the news every night because it was something that I did, that I loved, I accomplished it, and I don't miss it. When I walked away from it, it was really time to leave. Yeah. But what I do miss is when there's a breaking news story, that's when I get a little crazy because I want to be there. And now during the presidential campaign, because we would be covering all these people running, and pretty soon for the primaries, we would be going to the primaries and then going to the conventions. Yeah. That's when I miss it because that's your bread and butter.
Yeah.
That's what makes it exciting.
What was it like when you first started? Because you were the first woman in Atlanta TV.
And the first minority doing the evening news. There had been other women and other minorities doing like a noon show. But when it came to the bread and butter show, the 6 o'clock show in 1975, no women, no minorities doing that. And when I started, I would just say, thanks be to God, I had John Pruitt as the person sitting next to me. Because John deflected a lot of criticism. To a lot of black people, I wasn't black enough because they wanted me to have a huge afro and to be my brother, my sister. Yeah. And to a lot of white people, I was too black. And they did not think I was, quote, I will never forget this phrase, deferential enough to men.
Wow, who thought that up?
But I actually had several women call me that, white women call me and tell me that. So it could have been a very bad time for me had it not been for Don Elliott Heald, who was the general manager and who had just unbelievable support. John Pruitt, who was my buffer and accepted me, and really, in so many ways, he's still my best friend. He protected me. And so I started out working with people who wanted me to succeed versus feeling jealous. And that, I think, is why I was able to stay 37 years, because my beginning was very much supported. And then I think because I got into the community, and that's what I tell my young reporters all the time, you cannot sit on that set or just go out and do reports and think people are going to know you. You have got to go to those churches and speak. You've got to go to those career days and speak. You've got to serve on boards. I served on the board with United Way and worked my way up until I became chair of United Way. And I was the second woman and the first African-American for the Metro Atlanta United Way. But I'm also proud to say I was the first former United Way recipient who became chair. Because as I was growing up, my mother was a single parent. My parents divorced when I was 3 years old. My mother never made more than minimum wage. So I dressed from a United Way agency, Goodwill. I went through Girl Scouts, a United Way agency, because people paid those fees for me so that I could go. So when I look back at my life, I had my first job as a YMCA Tri-Gray Y leader, another United Way agency. So I always tell my kids, you cannot just sit there and say, I'm going to do my job as a reporter, and they're going to know my name, and they're going to know my voice, and that's all I have to do. No, you've got to invest in your community.
Yeah.
And I always tell them, you've got to remember, you don't just make your money here. You've got to invest your time, your talent, and your money in your community. You've got to feed back into it.
Yeah.
So I think that's why I've really been able to last 37 years. But that day-to-day grind, oh, no, I do not miss it. I would be happy if they would just call me in so that I could do the presidential elections. When there's breaking news, call me in. Otherwise, I don't want to be there every day.
Yeah, that's got to be tough because you would do, if you do a 6 o'clock report, you came back doing 11.
Well, you got
those
to
are
remember.
Weird hours.
You've got to remember, there was a time I was doing the 5 o'clock news, the 6 o'clock news, and the 11 o'clock news. And then when they added the 4, at that time I was doing the 4, the 5, the 6, and the 11. So eventually I came off the 11. Then I went to just doing the 4, 5, and 6. Then I just went to doing 4 and 6. And then the year I retired, I was just doing the 6. But I would have to be in there some days. Usually 2 o'clock, and you work until midnight, because I like to look at my work at the end of the day to see how did I do that day. I still have to critique what I do to make sure I'm doing it well.
Wow. I saw you a couple weeks ago. You mentioned juvenile justice at the Department of Juvenile Justice.
Yes.
Where you spoke to a group of kids there, and it was, you talked about growing up in Louisville, and it was wonderful. That was fascinating.
Thank you.
I wish I had recorded it. It was great. So
thank you.
You made a connection with those kids that it was just really, it was phenomenal. So I'm sure you're
thank
a great teacher.
You. I hope I am, but I try to be honest with people as I was with the kids. You know, the difference between most of the people in that room and those children is that we didn't get caught doing some of the stupid stuff we did. And then I think people really don't think about what they're getting ready to do, which was the reason I shared with them, you know, before you make a decision, you need to think about these things. And it's more important for them now because they're getting a second chance. And I think I look at many of them, and I know there was one young man in there, and I know you saw
yes,
him,
yeah.
who was so bright.
He was.
And
he was
so
exceptional.
And I kept thinking, my goodness, well, he's getting ready to graduate from that system. He can't go back home because home is not existing anymore for him. And if he does, he could fall into the same problem. So where is that transition for that child who's leaving the system, where they can go to a safe haven so they can still grow into who they need to be? And my husband now works for the Department of Juvenile Justice, and he was saying that's the one thing he wants to do is to get more mentors, more people in there who will say, I'm going to take responsibility for this child. Yes, my children, I'm raising them, but I can do something with this young man to keep him on the straight and narrow so that one day he can come back and do the same thing for someone else. It's all about love. John was telling me there are some kids who, when they get arrested at 13, their parents literally move, change the phone number, and never tell the kid where they are.
That's unimaginable. Yeah.
I know, but people do that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So I looked at those kids, and the ones who were in there, I just wanted to remind them, you are the leaders. You're here because you did something right, but you can't just stop. You've got to, in turn, teach someone else. It's about, my mama says all the time, you got to reach back, pull up, and push forward. And that was kind of the message. You know, what you did in the past is in the past. Let's work on the present, and then next go into the future.
You also, and you touched on working with breast cancer, but you're a two-time cancer
survivor. It's like, goodness gracious. Breast cancer 18 years ago, and then this past January, I was diagnosed with liver cancer. They removed 55% of my liver. It was a surprise because I've never had hepatitis. I'm not a drinker. So it was like, where did this come from?
Yeah.
And my doctor said, in today's environment, it could be anything from stress to environmental things you just don't know.
Yeah.
It's like, you get it? What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
For me, because I do have a very strong faith, it's like, if God brought me to this, then I'm supposed to learn something from it. And what is it? And so for me, it's sharing the word. And why am I sharing the word? Well, if I can have two different forms of cancer, and then I find out that more women die of heart disease than all the cancers combined, I've become a big proponent for women's heart health.
Oh, yeah.
So that, it's like, yes, I've dealt with the cancers, but my real emphasis right now in my volunteer work is with the American Heart Association and specifically the Go Red for Women campaign. Because I'm not joking, one out of three women die of heart disease. More women die of heart disease than men now.
Which is shocking. That's shocking to learn.
So one in 31 women will have breast cancer, one in three women.
So now your health, liver cancer is very, very, really
liver cancer
a big
was
one.
A scary one.
Yeah.
When my doctor told me, I said, you're kidding me. And I said, so what do we do? He said, well, we're going to go in and we're going to take out 55% of your liver and it will regenerate. If you got to have a cancer, this is a good one to have because the liver regenerates.
Yeah.
Luckily, thanks be to God, no chemo. In both cases with my cancer, no chemo, no radiation. It's a matter of now just watching my health. And that means for me not being in stressful situations. It means for me really being careful about what I eat now. It means sleeping, which I used to operate on 4 hours of sleep,
you know,
because I couldn't. But now I'm really learning to take care of myself. And my mother said it best, who is 92. She calls me Monty. You know, I quoted her a lot that day.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
She said, Monty, you've had two strikes with cancer, and in both cases, they were minor enough that you didn't have to have chemo, you didn't have to have radiation, they just removed it. Now, the third time God has to hit you with something, he may not be as kind. So you need to slow down and start taking care of yourself.
We could all do well to do that.
And then she said to me, as only a mother could, just remember, none of us came to stay, but you don't want to hasten your leaving. So, like for this event,
yeah,
coming here, normally I would have said, oh, I can't miss work on Sunday because of the radio show. I went, oh, no, yes, I can.
Yeah.
It would be nice to be on the island and to rest and to go someplace I haven't been before.
Right.
So cancer for me has slowed me down.
So were you going to be in the Georgia Music Hall of Fame, inducted into that? So what next after that? What next?
Well, you want to know what I'm doing for fun? I've always wanted to take piano lessons, and I've always put it off because it was like, I don't have time for that. Well, after this bout with cancer, I decided I need a bucket list. So John, for Christmas, got me a little white baby grand piano, and I start my lessons at Clayton State University in August, and I am so excited because I'm taking private lessons, and hopefully what I want to do is learn to play well enough so that I can rent a little club and do a night of Monica and music. See, I already got it. Monica and music to raise money for a charity.
That would be fabulous. I'd love to come.
I like you and your lovely wife.
Yes.
That's it. I'm doing that, and I'm teaching at Atlanta Metropolitan State College, and I'm volunteering for Meals on Wheels Atlanta because my mom's a senior, so I like working with seniors. And then I'm volunteering with Go Red for Women. So I'm very excited about what I'm doing. My daughter's now 35. I'm looking for her a husband. I'm ready for grandchildren.
Yeah.
So I am enjoying, I really am now taking time to enjoy what I've worked for. We moved to a lake 4 years ago, and now I had not set. We've been in that house 4 years, and I could count on one hand the number of times I'd been down to the dock and just did nothing.
Yeah.
And since my liver cancer diagnosis, I have been down there more than four times, just sitting and watching the geese and watching the fish, and just I'm breathing in life and embracing what I worked for. And I think that if anything else, that I think that Dr. Bobby taught me was that no matter what you work for, unless you share it with someone else, it's not worth working for.
Yeah.
And she said even the house you live in, she used to throw these big Christmas parties, and she'd invite everybody. And everybody from Georgia Music Hall of Fame would come, and it was so much fun. And she said, you know, it doesn't do any good to work for things if you don't share it with other people. So I'm now taking time to sit back and spending more time visiting my mom, spending more time sitting on the dock, outlining a book that I want to do with my mom's sayings.
I was just going to say that because you've been saying all your mom's saying, and I was going to say you should write these down. Sounds like you have.
I have, and now I'm in the process of actually spinning narratives around them. And she always shot straight from the hip, which is what I try to do. And that's what I was telling the kids. It's what you do with what you have that makes you what you are. And I heard that growing up all my life.
Yeah.
And my mom just said, it doesn't matter where you come from. I grew up in Smoketown, single parent. Mama didn't care about that. She said, that's an excuse. We don't make excuses. We make work. And so this part of my life, my last third, I'm about sharing what I have, but also having some fun.
Yeah. Does your mother, where does she still live in Louisville?
Oh, no, my mom lives around the corner from me.
Oh, okay.
She lived with us, and when we went on vacation 1 year, I had my cousin come stay with her, and when we came back, she said, I'm moving. We said, what do you mean you're moving? She said, I'm moving into assisted living around the corner. And I said, why? She said, I need to be around people my own age. And I was shocked, and I'm an only child. I mean, what do you mean you're leaving me? She said, I'm going to leave you one day anyway. So she's been happy in assisted living, but it bothered me because I want my mom in my house.
Yeah.
But then I have to remember, she's a pretty independent old lady.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Yeah,
very independent. Yeah. Very independent. So she's around the corner.
Thank you so much for taking time to do this. This has been a real pleasure.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
And congratulations on the Georgia Music Hall of Fame, and that's going to be a great event. And enjoy singing. I know you'll do great.
Well, all I'm going to say to you is, thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. Thank you, Lord. I just just want to thank you, Lord.
The 37th Annual Georgia Music Hall of Fame Awards will be September the 26th at the Georgia World Congress Center. Tickets are now available. I'm John Clark, Georgia News Network.